Session number 23181, Rule 6.
Yeah.
Mr. Jessop, Rule 6. Now, the next thing would probably be, not immediately after that, but the V-Day.
Yeah.
What do you remember of V-Day? You were actually at Belfast, weren't you?
Yes, we were. And we were due to leave with another Russian convoy on that particular day. And more or less everybody knew more or less when the VE Day was going to be, and it was just a case of waiting for it to be actually officially announced. And so it was, they announced VE Day, and of course it was spliced the main brace, so everybody got a double tot of rum that day, and everybody was just allowed. The bosun and bosun's mate, they had to stay aboard, and a couple of waiters for the water, but the rest of them all just given permission to go ashore. They had no time to be back. They, you know, get back when they were ready. And
what's your memory of it? Did you go ashore?
Yes, I did. Yeah, four of us sort of started off into town, and when we, just by the dockyard entrance, used to be the terminus for the trams. We came out, and quite often the drivers used to be in a little cafe there, and we'd had two tots of rum, and we'd had a couple of pints, and one of the lads said, "I can drive one of these," so. Yeah, go on, but you can't. So, of course, he gets in, and away we go, chugging down the road. We got the driver running after us, you know, and he's going down the road, bringing the old foot bell to get everybody out of the way. And we eventually had to stop because we didn't come to hitting into another tram. But we promptly got chucked off of that, and I thought we were going to get taken to the police station, but I think everybody sort of thought about it. Like, so we got away with that. We got dragged into so many parties, it was unbelievable. I think the last one we actually went into was about 11 o'clock at night, and I must have fallen asleep, and we left the house about six o'clock in the morning, and that was great. We had a tremendous time. I mean, the people in the Protestant part of the town were great. They gave us a tremendous time, and it was really.
How did you feel in yourself? I mean, you know, it was the end of the war in Europe.
I suppose, to a certain degree, I felt a bit punctured. To be honest, I mean, I must admit, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it thoroughly. I think the comradeship with the lads on board and everything like that was tremendous. I don't think you'd ever meet a type of comradeship out in ordinary civvy life, as we had in the Navy.
That was very important to you, was it?
Oh, extremely, yes. I think, because you're dependent on other people for certain things. You know, I mean, it wasn't just a case of casual acquaintance like you would have sort of here. With the comradeship on in the Navy, like, you know, you depended on them to help you out at any time. And I suppose there are many times that, you know, somebody has sort of got me out the mire. And I think it was a unique sort of comradeship. Yeah.
Now, immediately after, you did have to go on this convoy to Russia, didn't you? But because they did go back on.
Yeah.
According to this, it may be wrong, because there are other things wrong in this, you know.
No, we didn't. What we did, if I remember right, no, we didn't go back the second time, no. What we did after that was we left and we were going to Rosyth. Now, why were we going to Rosyth? I do not know. But I know that as we were going from Belfast to Rosyth, because that was around on the east coast, so we had to go right around the head of Scotland and come down the other side. And it was then that we saw all the German submarines coming in. And they were coming in, a lot of them were coming into Rosyth, and I think some came into Belfast, or Londonderry more than Belfast. Yes, we saw quite a lot of the German U-boats coming in. They had their own flag and our flag above it, like, you know. And we went round, and of course, in Rosyth at the time was Hitler's private yacht, the Grill, which everybody was trying to get aboard and trying to pinch a souvenir off of. I got a couple of glasses, but with a swastika on them. But
what was the yacht called, sorry?
The Grill. Grill. GRILLE. It was a present from the German people. It was up in, I think, Narvik in Norway. It was in Norway anyway, and it would be brought over from Norway to Rosyth. It was quite a nice yacht, but it had about a six-inch gun, I suppose. Very, very, you know, sweeping staircases and all that sort of thing.
So what happened then after Rosyth?
I think we must have gone back to Rosyth, because it was... back to Belfast. Why we'd gone to Rosyth, I really don't know. But whether it was to sort of chase these submarines up. Because we must have gone back to Belfast, because we went from Belfast to Chatham.
What happened then? You went to Chatham in May, or...?
Yeah, May in 45.
And what happened there?
Was it May or June? It could have been May or June. We decommissioned. Yeah, we went down there to decommission. Like, you know, we removed all the.
Tell me about decommissioning. What exactly happened?
Well, you remove all armaments from the ship, all shells and depth charges, hedgehogs, and all that sort of thing. And they're all taken ashore, and all food stuff is taken ashore, and. Then, right at the very end, because we were still staying aboard the ship, we took all bedding and that sort of thing, were taken off the ship and put in store. And then the ships were mothballed. It's a lie, because we left it there, we went by train. I then went through to Harwich.
So what were you doing at Harwich? Were you joining a ship there? Or?
Yeah, we joined a ship there, the HMS Tyne. No, HMS Duncansby Head first, and she was taken out. And
HMS?
Duncansby Head. She was an aircraft repair ship.
What do you remember of your time aboard those ships? They were both based at Harwich, were they?
They were, yeah. They were a reserve fleet there. All these ships were put into mothballs. They used to put them in two or three wide, and these contractors used to come in and they'd put sort of wire mesh over the guns and over different parts, and then spray it with this foam stuff which went hard and protected the actual ship. And
so what were your duties?
What was duties there? I was in the fleet mail office.
What did that entail?
Well, all the getting all the mail from the different ships, because there was a hell of a lot of ships there. We had an office abroad at Parkeston Quay, and we'd collect all the mail and bundle it, and then send it off to go away.
So you were just living aboard the Duncan's Behead, and then the time.
Yeah, more or less. Yeah, I more or less lived aboard and whatever. We had then all the mail used to be brought in to us from the GPO, and we'd sort it all for all the different ships in the fleet, and then their postman used to come in and pick it up and take it back to the ship. So, but and although there was a tremendous number of ships there, the majority of them, I would thought, 70% of them at least, were not inhabited. They were all just in mothballs, like, you know, had these this stuff all over them to protect them.
And how long were you in the Fleet Mail Office then?
Right until I got demobbed.
And when was that?
Where?
When, sorry.
When, let me see, that would have been 46.
So you were there about a year or so?
Nearly a year, yeah, I suppose.
And what about the demobilisation procedure? What do you remember of that?
Well, I went up to York. Firstly, I went to Chatham, back to Chatham, to do demob routine.
What was that?
That's similar, what's named, to joining routine, drafting routine. You went around all the different ones, dentist, doctor, all the lot. You went all the way around. Because with being on a ship that had bunks, a lot of us seemed to have lost our hammock. So, of course, we turned up at Washington without a hammock, like, you know, and we got charged for them, and you had to sort of lay all your kit out and to see what you got and what you hadn't got. And I was quite short of quite a few things, like, you know, so that was all deducted from your wages. And we got through the wash name on the Friday evening, and the main wash names were closed.
Main what, sorry?
The main demob centres were closed, bar one, and that was York. York was open. So I had to sort of, they said, well, you can wait until Monday or Tuesday and go to one of the ordinary ones or go up to York. I thought, well, I've seen enough of the wash name now. I sort of wanted to get out, because I found that after the end of the war, the Navy became a very different kettle of fish, It was all back to having the bow over the ear, the M right over the nose, and you wore a lanyard, and whereas life on a destroyer, especially, I mean, not so on a battleship or even perhaps a cruiser, but life on a destroyer was very, very easygoing. Nobody sort of worried you. In fact, there was one of the only troubles with the BDEs. They couldn't make enough water. And we got to the point where we were so short of water, the coxswain used to, in the case where the wash heads I used to use, and used to stand there with a jug, and he'd fill it up with hot water and tip it into the bowl, and that was what you got to wash, shave, clean your teeth. It was always a job to think, well, what one do I do first? Do I clean my teeth and spit in the water? Or what do I do? A bath was or shower was out of the question. Most definitely out of the question. But they used to make, they had their own evaporators on them, and they made their own fresh water, you see. But they could never make enough to... You see, we the crew of a British ship always carried a lot more complement than the Americans. But that's, and I mean, there were supposed to be enough bunks to go around, but we still had fellas in hammocks on board. But so we were always short of water.
Now, when you were demobilised, that was 1946, so you came out into civilian life. What were you going to do? I mean, you'd sort of, you'd gone into the Navy underage.
That's right.
They never spotted you were underage.
No.
So what did you do when you came out of the Navy in 1946?
Well, I thought, well, the only thing I know is the water, the sea. So I came back. We lived at Harwich at the time. And I came back there and joined the Merchant Navy, and I was on a job there for quite some time, ferrying troops from Germany to from Hoek van Holland to Harwich, and then they were brought home, like, you know. Also, we brought over quite a lot of EVWs. European volunteer workers, as they were called, and we used to bring them over, and also take fresh troops back to Holland.
And how long did you do that for?
Oh, I did it for quite a long while. It was beginning to come to an end, and I then went and joined British Rail. Their ships, which we used to, and I was on a ferry running between Harwich and Zeebrugge, and we used to carry trucks between Harwich and Zeebrugge and bring loaded ones back, which quite a lot of them went out were loaded, and that was what we did, like, you know, all the time.
How long did you keep that up?
Not over long, because I was then given a house in Essex, because, as you know, if you left a firm to go into the forces, they had to take you back. Well, I used to work for the Thames Board Mills, making paper and cardboard boxes and all that sort of thing, and I got a house, so of course I went back with them, and
when was that?
Oh, heaven help! There you are, asking. I don't really think I'll put a date to that.
So when did you settle down into a civilian career then?
I suppose it might really settle down. I suppose it must have been about 1952.
What did you do then?
I went to work for a firm called Tileman, who did the big chimneys on factories and water towers and all that sort of thing.
What were you doing? You weren't a steeple. You were a steeple.
I was a steeple, yes.
And that's the thing about heights you were on about.
Yeah, yeah. I've always been in what's name.
And
I never won anything in the war, but I won a medal in a piece.
What sort of medal?
British Empire Medal.
What was that for?
I was on the London Radio Tower, the GPO Tower. I was in charge of the building of that at a particular time. And it was Thursday before Easter, 1963. And we went, and one lad was leaving, so I said to the hoist driver, I said, come on, take us down, I said, because he wants his papers, like, you know, his P45 and insurance books and everything like that. So we were going down, and all of a sudden, next thing we knew was we were flying through the air at a mighty rate of knots, and we hit the bottom. And in the bottom, right in the bottom, was the motor that drove the hoist. And we just went, we had covered that with brand new railway sleepers, but we went straight through them. We just chopped them in pieces, and they eventually got us out because the actual base of the lift shaft was about six foot, no more than that, 10 foot below level. So they couldn't burn the gates or anything else. So they had to get chains and tackles, you know, and sort of force them open and then put a ladder down. I then suddenly realised I'd lost that. That had gone.
That's your little finger.
Yeah, and what happened there was I must have grabbed hold of the trellis gate. Of course, it was a finger came down into the V. It just pulled it out, like, you know, pulled it out to that joint there. But what had happened was that what we had there, you had a circular, what's them, like that, and then you had two cross walls, and a short cross wall there. Well, in these two segments here, they were putting a lightweight stairway. And because they were pulling them up, putting a bolt in the wall and hanging their block on it and pulling them up. There was a couple of them on this, and this particular day, one of them out. I'd always told them, like, you know, whatever you do, never use more than a 6-inch bolt. And of course, one of them was out. Of course, as he was pulling this, what's them up, it was catching. So eventually the bolt was bending, so he threw that one down and put a 10-inch, because as he pushed it as close to the wall as he could so that it didn't bend, the other side was sticking out. So as we were coming down, the counterweight was coming up, because when it got to the bolt, it caught the bolt and stopped. I mean, when you've got it in shear and you've got high tensile bolt, when it's in shear, it takes an awful lot of washing to cut it or snap it. And that stopped. Of course, the motor was still driving, and the headgear then decided to come down. And that was when we came down 90 feet, actually, and we hit the bottom.
And what happened to the young lad?
Which one?
The lad you were with, taking down.
Oh, there was four of us in the hoist. Eventually, when they got the hoist open, like, you know, they got it open, say, with block and tackle, and put a ladder down, and I was laying on the floor then, and one of them ran up, and he ran out, and as he was running out, so the first aid officer was just coming in, and he just stuck his fist out and clunked him on the jaw, like, you know, just stop it. Because he'd run the bones, pardon me, through the bottom of the foot. And they got three of them out, and then a doctor came down, because we were quite near the Middlesex Hospital, like, you know, so we didn't have far to go. The doctor came down and they needed a special stretcher, so an ambulance had to go back and get that. That was actually when the ambulance driver said, do you want a cigarette? So, of course, or just, you know, lovely, I'll have a cigarette. I had a cigarette, and it was then that when they take it out of my mouth, I saw that the finger was gone. And of course, when I went into hospital, the trouble was I'd had so much morphine and that sort of thing, they couldn't give me anything else for this, because he wanted to take this last knuckle out. So he said, I'm afraid, you know, we're going to have to leave it until what day. He said, I'd like to get it out and so that we can, you know, seal it all out. So, great one, me, you know. You'll carry on, you know, and he just got hold of it, turned it like that, and it was gone. So I said, that's it.
And you were awarded the BEM for your sort of overall conduct during it, were you?
Or yeah, for the construction.
For the construction, not for the accident, then? No, not for anything, part of it, yeah.
No, it was my work in regard to the construction of the tower.
Do you think your naval career had done you any good or bad, you know, either mentally or physically? How do you think it had affected you?
I wouldn't think physically, but mentally, yes. I think, you know, you learn that very much so that you're not the only one in the world. You know, you've got to realise that other people need things as much as you do. And you've got to quite often take your turn to get your share, like, you know.
So it was sort of a good thing mentally for you?
Oh, yes, I think so. I think mentally, it certainly made a man of me. Yeah, I mean, I was quite young when I went in, but I think I was quite knowledgeable and when I came out. You know.
Do you still keep in touch with any of the naval associations or any of the old crew of the Baisley?
No, I was saying to Harry Fiennes. There was two I'd really like to get hold of, and that was two brothers, which is very, very unusual for the Navy to let two brothers go on one ship. There was Doug and, I can't remember the other one's name, Lightman. One was a Killick and one was an ordinary seaman. In fact, he came just after me.
So you haven't met any of them since?
No, I can't say I always have, sorry. I met one, Harry Fiennes gave a chappie at Annerley my address, and we spoke and saw each other.
Did you remember him?
No, he wasn't actually off of my ship, he was off the group, but not off the ship.
And you're a member of the Captain's Class Association, or their mailing list,
yeah.
Anyway. Do you think that's an important sort of thing to keep going? Or?
Oh, I think it's a great thing. Like, you know, I think that, you know, even just talking to you over these last couple of days, it's surprising the things that have come back. And I feel sure that if, you know, if you were back in company with these people and there were perhaps some who were aboard the same ship as you, so much more would come back. Yeah, tremendous amount.
Thank you very much.